All right, good morning, golfers. Welcome to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Thank you for joining me on this June 17th, 2017, Saturday, moving day at the U.S. Open. We have a fearsome foursome show this morning. We got Woody Lashin in studio, co-owner of Pete's Golf Shop. Steve Goldman is also in studio, and we're going to be joined shortly by none other than John Huggin. Gentlemen, thanks for coming in this morning. I really appreciate the time.
My pleasure to be here, as always. Good to have the legendary Woody Lashin in studio with us.
That's right.
Always happy to be here in studio with you boys.
We have a great show coming up. Obviously, we have a lot to talk about. New venue here, U.S. Open.
Wait, there's a golf tournament this week?
Well, I think it's a PGA Tour event going on this week.
Oh. Sure.
Oh, shots fired.
Man.
No, we do.
That's the best shot I've seen you hit in a while.
It's the only shot I've hit in a while. So, you know, just, you know, a lot to dissect. You know, Erin Hills, a new golf course, a new venue for the USGA. I mean, the USGA has kind of gone off the traditional path in recent years. The redoing of Pinehurst, the back-to-back Pinehurst tournaments, the Chambers Bay, now Erin Hills. You know, I think there's a lot to unpack there, and I think we have a varying different views in terms of if the USGA should be doing this in the first place. Woody, you have a good perspective. I have my own, Steve, and I'm looking forward to seeing what John has to say as well.
Yeah, I'm curious to see what John has to say. You know, I was just thinking, by the way, it is nice for them at least to be trying different things. You can't argue with that.
Right.
Whether they maybe should continue to do that or they should go back to their old ways, that's the argument you can have. But you certainly can't argue with them saying, hey, well, let's try something a little bit different.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I thought, To my perspective was I thought that was enough when Mike Davis brought in flexible setups and drivable par fours instead of everything being a long slog, you know, 475-yard par four or 500-yard par five now, a par four now that they, if they really want to test a player. So have we gone too far? I don't know. I'm interested in talking to John about it and you guys. But let's get to our first break. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
The Long Island Golf Association is a nonprofit organization of 81 private and public clubs. The LIGA conducts 15 championships annually and works closely with the Long Island Caddy Scholarship Fund. The scholarships are granted to young men and women who are employed at member clubs. For more information on how you can participate in a championship, or if you'd like to donate your time as a volunteer, please call the LIGA at 516-746-1015. That's 516-746-1015. 1015, or visit us at www.longislandgolf.org.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia in studio, Woody Lashin, Steve Goldman, and on the line, none other than golf writer John Huggin. John, how are you doing this morning from Erin Hills?
I'm very well. Nice to be with you.
Yep, always a pleasure to have you. Just curious, you know, on your thoughts just in the venue itself. I'm of the perspective I'm a little uninspired by the venue. You know, trying to have the golfers, the best golfers in the world, use every golf club in the bag, including driver, and pushes the golf course to 8,000 yards. I'm longing for 20-yard fairways and a traditional, rough that I could get lost in, and just a traditional golf course layout. Your opening thoughts on Erin Hills?
Well, I was never a fan of the traditional U.S. Open, if you like, that you just described, you know, the narrow fairways, the thick rough, the fast greens, all the rest of it. Excuse me. I always thought that was kind of one-dimensional, that the players all stood on the tee, you know, and that all they had one choice, one way to play the hole, and everybody played the hole the same way, and I thought that was kind of dull. So I kind of approved of Mike Davis at least trying different things. But this week, I must admit, I'm like you. I'm kind of ambivalent about the... I like the fact that they're having to hit drive, but I don't like the fact that they're having to play a golf course that is practically 8,000 yards long. Because, and plus, distance is not the thing that scares these guys these days. I mean, yesterday the final hole was 676 yards long, and Dustin Johnson hit it over the back in two. So distance by itself is not enough to keep the scores up. They have to do other stuff. So that inevitably means tricking the course up to some extent with pin positions and all the rest of it.
John, you read my mind, because I was talking to Anthony Woody about the same thing, and it seems ironically enough that the hole that seems to be giving the players the most difficulty is the par 3 ninth hole, which is no more than 150 yards. And unfortunately for Drew Love and Justin Rose, they bogeyed it as their last hole yesterday, and that's what cost them the cut. So, you know, you're right. I mean, I don't understand why there's this false narrative that we have to make holes longer and that suddenly makes them more difficult.
Well, there's an obvious solution, and one I bang on about constantly to the point of boredom with my friends and colleagues. But if they knocked 50 yards off the ball, they wouldn't have things like this, and they could play the traditional courses that we all love and play them in a way that the original designer intended, and not have to do what they did at Merion a few years ago, which is, you know, wonderful golf course. But in order to keep the scores within a, you know, what the US find is a reasonable level, they had to cover the place in long grass. And all the angles that the designer wanted the players to be able to create to get the best line into the flags, they were gone. And everybody ended up playing the holes the same way, just like I said earlier. And, you know, so something needs to be done. And the obvious fix, or the easy fix for me, is to do something about the distance the golf ball goes when these guys hit it.
John, I'm curious, what are you hearing from the players? Like, what is the players' reaction to the golf course? Are they, you know, they not enjoying it like we're not enjoying it? Or are they saying, oh, this is much better? I'm curious to what their take is.
Well, publicly and privately are two different things.
I'm interested in privately, please. Publicly, I can get...
I'll tell you publicly.
I spoke to a few players, maybe four or five yesterday afternoon. Now, admittedly, all five of them had missed the cut. It's probably a little bit jaundiced in their point of view. But to a man, they didn't like it. They thought it was contrived and a bit of a caricature, really. I mean, every feature on that golf course is bigger than it really should be. And that was really the feeling. I think too many of them will be rushing back to play socially with their friends, put it that way.
Yeah, I would. I mean, going back to your point about not liking the traditional U.S., you know, just in the sense of the test and it being played one way. My point is that at least the USGA had an identity at one point, and that was the test. Whether you agree with the test or not, it was a traditional course. It was maybe a one-dimensional setup, but at least it was their identity. And I just, you know, I just feel like we've lost our way a little bit. I'm not sure if you agree with it.
Well, a little bit, yeah. I mean, strangely, you're not the first person I've heard say that this week, which I never thought I would hear, that, you know, people would be pining for the old days in terms of the U.S. Open. I'm not really one of them. I mean, I love these old golf courses. I mean, how could you criticize courses like Winfield and Shinnecock?
Right.
And they're wonderful, wonderful types of golf. But it's just what the USGA do to them. I mean, they always claim, and Mike Davis claimed again this week, that they don't care about the winning score and no one discusses, you know, that level par must win. But it's funny how it happens almost every year.
Right, right.
And it's at their doing, too. It's, if they left the golf course alone and just let the players play, then it wouldn't happen that way.
Well, the problem is, if they do that, if the course is left to, as it is the other 51 weeks of the year, these guys go around in nothing. They hit the ball so far these days, which gets back to my original point that if you don't fix the ball, you've got to fix the golf course in their mind. So to me, it would be an awful lot easier, an awful lot cheaper to fix the golf ball and leave the courses alone. I mean, I think, strangely, golf is the only sport I can think of that has protected the equipment at the expense of the venues. Every other sport, I mean, baseball is the perfect example, where they've restricted the, you know, the bats and the, I'm sure the balls as well, and it's just so that they can stay in the stadiums, because if they let them use the metal bats at the top level, I'm sure, you know, you know better than me, but they would be hitting home runs a lot more often, and the game would be perverted.
Well, you know, John, that's kind of a little up my alley, the equipment stuff. And, you know, the problem is the USGA was quite slow. I mean, they didn't believe in the trampoline effect, that it could happen. I remember when the companies started designing drivers that got able to create higher ball speeds, and USGA was like, well, you can't have trampoline effect. It's not, you know. And, of course, the manufacturers were like, oh, okay, sure. And, you know, then they kind of got in the game a little late. Same thing with the golf ball. They never believed that you could have a golf ball that could, you know, spin on a 30-yard shot and not spin on a, you know, 300-yard drive. And yet the manufacturers have done it. The whole rollback to golf ball thing, I like it, but I don't like it because I know that the average golfer that I sure work with, they can't roll back the golf ball for their games.
No, I'm not talking about rolling the ball back for them. I'm just talking about for the pros, which gets you into this wonderful word bifurcation, which the USGA and the RNA seem to hate. But the fact is, they've created a situation whereby the game that you and I play has never been further removed from the game that the pros play, and they've created this bifurcation by doing nothing.
Well, the problem is that you have an amateur body that's governing the rules for everyone, including professionals. And that's, you know, obviously there's no way to fix that, but that's really where the problem lies, because like you said, you know, Little League Baseball has different rules than Major League Baseball. But if it was the USGA in charge, then everybody would have metal bats and, you know, the bases would be 60 feet away from each other. And, you know, of course, you know, everybody would hit home runs.
I mean, it's hard to describe the, again, privately, they don't go public with this very often, but the level of contempt felt by nearly every professional on European Tour and the PGA Tour towards the RNA and the USGA, it's hard to measure that. It's almost off the scale. I mean, they call them the amateurs, and not in a good way. And Your point is right. It's a very strange situation that professional golf allows the rules to be made by somebody other than themselves. And it's high time, I think, that the PGA Tour and the European Tour and all the rest of them stepped up and went their own way.
I think John's right.
Well, I mean, this sense of this arrogance of the RNA and the USGA to act like there's no, you know, there's nothing wrong with the ball, there's no trampoline effect, when we know the arrogance that they don't think that the game is bifurcated, when in fact we have championship tees. That in itself is bifurcating the game. There's no, you know, you go to a venue that has you go to Shinnecock, I mean, you go to Bethpage Black, nobody goes, I mean, very few people go back to the championship tees, like on number 9. I mean, that tee is so far back, it's in Farmingdale College. I mean, so the idea that there's no bifurcation, the arrogance that they don't know that the game, that they don't admit that there is already bifurcation, is just proves their arrogance and why they, like, to your point, that they're treading, you know, they're playing with fire, that at some point the European Tours and the PGA Tour could just go their own way and band together, just as the PGA Tour did a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing is, it's kind of heartbreaking. I mean, I live near St. Andrews in Scotland, and I go to the old course quite often, and you walk around it. But if you go there when they're playing a professional tournament, I mean, these guys spend a huge amount of time walking from the previous green back, maybe 75 to 80 yards, sometimes 100 yards back to the next tee. I mean, it's that, and they wonder why they take, you know, 5.5 hours to go around. It's because they're spending so much time walking backwards. You know, they cover the same ground about two times. And especially on that golf course, I mean, if ever a golf course should be a monument to to the game, it's that one. And we're now at the stage, sadly, where we're getting to the point where we can't compare historically the game that Jack Nicklaus and all the rest of them played even 35, 40 years ago with the game that they play now. I mean, with the prevailing wind, the last hole on the old course at St Andrews is today for the professionals a long par 3. It's not even a par 4.
Yeah. We're going to more on this, but let's take our next bump here. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Play like a pro with a custom set of PXG clubs in your bag. Designed to deliver unrivaled performance and fitted to optimize your game, PXG clubs will help you unlock your true potential. We guarantee you've never played like this before. Get fitted for PXG clubs at Pete's Golf Shop today.
Founded in the early 1990s, Tri-State Turfgrass Research Foundation exists to improve golf course conditions throughout the Tri-State area, positively impacting millions of golfers each year. The foundation identifies key turfgrass problems, solicits donations, and works with university professors to solve these problems through integrated pest management. Since its inception, Tri-State has raised $1.1 million for turfgrass research. We would like to thank the Long Island Golf Course Superintendents Association for their continued support. If you would like to make a donation, visit tristateturf.org. Once again, that's Tri-State. turf.org.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to have in studio Steve Goldman and the man, the myth, the legend, Woody Lashin. Woody Lashin. And on the line is golf writer John Huggin. John, somebody that you and I are probably familiar with, but maybe not a lot of people. And quite the good lad, Tommy Fleetwood. Tell us a little bit about him.
Yeah, well, Tommy Fleetwood, he ticks a lot of boxes. He's been a up-and-coming star for quite a while now. He was the number one amateur in the world when he turned professional. He won the English Amateur. He played in the Walker Cup. He got to the final of the British Amateur. He topped the Challenge Tour money list in Europe at the age of 20. Won fairly early on in his European Tour career, and then he kind of slumped a little bit. He changed teachers, not the best move as it turned out. He's gone back to his old teacher, and over the last kind of year and a half, he's progressed steadily. He won in Abu Dhabi this year. He was second in the WGC in Mexico. He lost a playoff in China. He's a real up-and-comer. The strength of his game is his ball striking. He's a phenomenal ball striker. And when he gets on a roll on the greens, he's capable of winning anywhere. It would not be a huge surprise to me if he won this week on this golf course. It plays to his strength. Tee the green, there's very, very few better than him.
Would he be your pick if I'm looking at the leaderboard right now and you're saying, hey, who am I going to pick to win?
Oh, man, have you looked at that leaderboard? How could you possibly?
Come on, John. Let's go.
Ask tough questions, John.
Well, I tell you what, if you were picking somebody, it probably wouldn't be somebody who's already won a major. I think there's only two, Sergio and Martin Keimer, that are anywhere near the lead.
That's right.
It looks like we're going to get a seventh first-time winner in a row if the odds are. Certainly, the odds are same of that.
Do you know anything about Champ, the amateur here? I see it was eighth place.
Yep.
Not a thing.
Well, that makes two of us.
Well, I mean, the only thing that I do know about him is that he hits the ball country mile, that's for sure. I mean, I know that you could say that merely about any of them, but I mean, him in particular, it seems to me that he's like prodigiously long, I guess you could say.
Well, that's the next generation. That's what we're going to get next. It's going to get longer and longer and longer. And if we ever come back to Erin Hills, that course is going to be stretched to over 8,000 yards. So that's the future if we don't do something about it.
Well, John, you were talking about no major champions on the leaderboard. I mean, the list of people that made the cut is, you know, this could be, you know, a Hall of Fame list. I mean, you have Justin Rose, Adam Scott, Henrik Stenson, Bubba Watson, Dustin Johnson, Rory McIlroy, Graham McDowell, Jimmy Walker, Jason Duffner, Daniel Berger, Jason Day, and that's just a partial list of who missed the cut. And yet, look, you know, obviously, no offense, but you've got Paul Casey, Brian Harman, Tommy Fleetwood, and Brooks Koepka at the top of the leaderboard. I mean, what do we make of this?
Well, it's too much of a coincidence, isn't it, really? The USGA may make a big, big deal out of we're trying to identify the best players. Well, they haven't done a very good job of that this week. I mean, the very best players, I mean, they don't mean to imply that the guys at the top of the board are not really good players. They obviously are. But they're not the very best players. And when it comes to majors, I have to admit that I'm a complete snob when it comes to major championships. I want the very best players to be winning these things. I can live with the occasional surprise winner, perhaps, but we could get somebody really weird and wonderful this week. And there's some good aspects to that, and there's bad aspects too. But I don't know, John. I like to see the top guys up there, and there's very few of them around.
Yeah, well, I'm with you, and I think also for golf's sake, you know, the avid golfer, he'll go watch the U.S. Open no matter what, but the golfer we need to get, he turns it on and he goes, who's Tommy Fleetwood? I don't know, Koepka, I don't know these guys. I'm going to go do something else. Whereas if he looks up and he says, oh, Jason Day, Justin Johnson, they're dueling it out, I got to watch this. We need that.
Well, if I'm Mr. NBC this weekend, excuse me, I'm praying for Ricky Fowler to do well.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I agree with you, and I'm in the same camp. I mean, but to be fair, two of those guys are coming off form is fickle, number one, and there's no doubt about that. But you also have Jason Day, who's distracted by his mother, hasn't really played well. I mean, he was awful at the Memorial. Rory's been coming off the injury that he couldn't even play full practice rounds or even hit a full, do a full load of a warm-up. Dustin Johnson, slips on whatever, hurts his back, and then his wife has a C-section on Monday or Tuesday, or doesn't get it there until Wednesday or Tuesday night, whatever it was. The top group of guys didn't really necessarily come in on form, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we saw from Rory at the end of the second round, if you're a Rory fan, you're hopeful that augurs well for the near future. He's going to golf. Well, the plan is to play a lot of golf in the next 8 weeks between now and the PGA Championship in August. He was 4 under par for the last six. I actually watched him, and he should have been 6 under par for the last six, to be honest. So if that continues on, he's the guy that, as you did, he just needs to play. I think he's only played 20 or 21 competitive rounds this year, which is ridiculous when you think about it. But it's a good point. They all came in with reasons to fail, and they all did. So, I'm not sure what to say about it. It could be just a coincidence, but I doubt it.
Right.
John, one of the players that has gotten a lot of attention, especially on the PGA Tour this year, is John Rahm. And for the first time in his career, he's had a little adversity. He's missed a cut. And this week he missed the cut at the Open. And there's been a lot of video around about him throwing his club and being frustrated. You know, obviously, in the world of social media, everybody's got a camera, so obviously this could be anybody. But I'm wondering if John is having a little trouble adjusting to adversity for the first time in his professional career.
Well, I think he's maybe adjusting to the amount of attention he's been getting as well. I mean, it was a huge story in Golf Digest by Jaime Diaz on him recently. He's been hailed almost universally as the next star. I mean, in Europe, they're very excited because it looks like he'll come into the Ryder Cup team next year somewhere near the top. And that makes a big difference. If nearly everybody in the team moves down one slot, that makes a huge difference to the strength of the side. But you're right. I mean, you know, I kind of smiled when I saw what he did. I mean, it kind of crossed the line a little bit. But I people get too worked up about that stuff. I mean, we're all human. We're all golfers, we've all been there, and we've all wanted to slam the club into the ground, and we've all done that, I'm sure. So I wouldn't get too worked up about it until it becomes a habit. If he's doing it all the time, then it's an issue. But now and again, I mean, come on, let the guy vent a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you. In the sense that I think we do get a little worked up, but I also thought he did cross the line a touch when he carried on one too many times, I thought, for yesterday.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Until it becomes something that he's doing every second week, I would give him a pass just this time.
Absolutely. I don't even know. I want to ask you, what do you think of the weekend? But I really don't even know how to ask it, to be honest with you. I mean, this is...
Good, John. Pick a name out of a hat,
pick
will you?
Pick a name. I mean, listen, Paul Casey wouldn't be a bad story either. I know that Ricky Fowler is probably the one that everybody's hoping for on this, you know, on both sides of the pond. Obviously, Tommy Fleetwood on your side of the pond. And Paul Casey wouldn't be a bad story either. He's certainly been around long enough. Maybe not the most well-liked guy, but wouldn't be a bad story either. But
hey, and how ironic would it be if Brian Harman becomes the first lefty to win the U.S. Open the year that Phil Mickelson doesn't even play?
Right. So what do you make of the weekend, John? Just thoughts. I don't even know how to ask it, to be honest.
Well, I think the weather's going to be an issue. I think that the forecast for tomorrow is for it to be quite windy. Now, I think the USGA are going to have to be very careful in how they set the course up if that's the case. I'm thinking especially, excuse me, with the regard to the pin position, because they could make it, you could have another Shinnecock on your hands almost. Maybe not quite, because if it rains, it's certainly rained over, and if it rains more today, the course is going to be softer than Shinnecock was back in the day. But they're going to have to be careful, and I kind of like the fact that it's going to be windy, and it presents a different challenge. Anything that makes the players, puts doubt in the players' mind and makes them think, I'm all for that.
Yeah, I think the more questions you can ask these guys, the better off we are viewing-wise, that's for sure. John, thank you so much for getting up a little earlier and joining us this morning. Obviously, you've always been a good friend of the program, and we appreciate you having you on.
My pleasure. Jet lags are wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, take care, John, and enjoy the action.
Thank you.
Take care. All right, that was John Huggin. We're going to take a short break, 30-second break, and we'll be back to wrap things up. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to have in studio Steve Goldman and Woody Lashin. Gentlemen, I mean, I think we covered a lot of ground with John, and you know, it should be an interesting weekend nonetheless.
I'm looking forward to watching. I mean, let's hope it's going to be exciting. And
I can just feel the sense of enthusiasm in your voice.
I love the U.S. Open.
I know.
Come on, it's the national championship. How do you not get up for it?
No,
even regardless of who's on the leaderboard. I mean, you know, look, this is what we do. This is what we love. So, you know, we're always going to turn the TV on. But I think Fox is in big trouble this weekend. If Ricky Fowler backs up his 73 with another 73 and he's not in the leaderboard, I think Fox is going to be in big trouble on Sunday.
I mean, the bottom line is the sound in our hearts.
Yeah.
And we do like this championship, which is why being so uninspired is so disappointing.
Well, speaking of championships, we got a big one coming up this week, right, Rudy?
Yeah, Long Island Golf Association, Long Island Amateur this week, starting Tuesday at St. George,
that's the LIGA, and as you said pre-show, the antithesis of, Aaron Hills.
That's right, 6,300 yards, short, boy, you better head straight, little greens, undulations, golf your ball. You can't go there and try to overpower the golf course. That's not going to work there. It's a real cool venue. I put it the other day, it's in great shape. I'm curious, you'll get to see golfers be in the mix as opposed to the guys who just bomb it.
Yeah, and renovated, I believe, by Gil Hands. They did a little touch-up there and said he fell.
No trees.
And said he fell in love with that golf course from the air. He didn't even know what it was. He was flying out, saw the golf course from the ground, and said, "What is that golf course?" And went and saw it and ended up doing a remodel of it. And just fun and great to hear that you said 6,300 yards, no trees, and you can't overpower the golf course. What a novel concept. All right, that's it, folks. That's all we have for this week. Enjoy the Open. We love it. You love it. Make sure you see your local PGA professional and see Woody at Pete's Golf Shop and get fitted properly for the first time in your life. You'll never regret it. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Let's go.